I'm a little bit of a jerk when it comes to branding, right? A little bit of a snob. And a little bit of, if you want me to work with you on your brand, I know it's your brand, but I get final creative oversight. They come with a vision, but they also come with a goal. And so when the goal is competing with the vision, it's easier to convince them. If you said, this is your goal, this path isn't gonna get you to that goal. So what do you wanna hold on to? The AI agent, right? The AI agent. We've been having fun. The trends have been having fun, right? Can I turn myself into a Simpsons meme, right? Can I turn my dog into a Ghibli studio art? I think that now we're moving from fun to skill sets. Never allow your income to be held hostage by something else. Your brand is way bigger. Don't let it be held hostage by somebody else's platform. That's the biggest misconception, is that what problem do you solve? Well, sometimes I don't solve a problem. I just feed a desire.
Okay? I was gonna say Diet Coke does not fix a problem I have. I have water. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jonathan Mast, your host, and we're so happy you're here on the AI Transformation Podcast. I'm really excited today. Jay and I are going to be having a conversation about a lot of different things. And Jay and I had met recently online, and I'm like, Jay, we need to get you on the podcast and have a conversation. So you guys are going to get to know Jay with me as we dive into that, because we kind of circumvented a lot of the normal introductions and said, let's hop on a podcast. So Jay, for those that aren't familiar with you, would you tell us just a little bit about yourself and who you serve?
Yeah, so these days, and we can talk about the transition. These days, I'm an AI brand architect, and I really help entrepreneurs leverage AI to create content, courses, and really expand the positioning of their brand. So these days, AI is pretty exciting, but I've been in the branding industry for over 20 years. So I'm going to date myself. I've been in here since 1990s, in the 90s, as the kids say, the 1900s. So I've been around for a while.
Oh, you I think are younger than I am, but I can relate. I sold my first website in 1995. So it's been a while. Well, yeah. Talk to us a little bit about, Jay, how did you get in, let's go back 20-some years. How did you get into the branding industry, and what types of things have you seen change over the last years as it relates to kind of fundamental branding? We'll talk about AI in a minute, but how did you get into the branding industry? How did you become a brand expert?
Right, and so I think I started out as a graphic designer. So I started out doing desktop publishing. Remember when you could go to Office Depot and buy perforated business cards and print them out of your printer, right? And we thought we were doing something when we bought that fancy paper.
That printer. Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
You could pass out your cards, and like, we did not care about that perforated line. They were like, it's not professional. We don't care, baby. We do this ourselves. So I think I started out there. And I remember trying to learn Photoshop on the internet when it took 30 minutes for one web page to load.
Oh, right? I remember those days.
And do you remember somebody used to put up screenshots and type these detailed tutorials out?
Yes.
After it loaded, and I would print them out and read it. And so I remember teaching myself Photoshop back in the day, right? And so what happened was all of that work, I really came from an IT background. Worked at Hewlett Packard and places like that, but I had the creative bug, so I just wanted to be more creative. So what happened was Coca-Cola had an opening, and they needed somebody who had technology and creative. I was called the KO directory admin, so I had to import the entire global directory for Coca-Cola, keep it in a system, but once a year, they wanted a printed copy, so I had to know desktop publishing for that. So now, at that time, Coca-Cola was the most recognizable brand in the world. You talk about learning to brand. You walk into this building with these great big windows and marble floors, and there's a rotunda, and then you see the big Coca-Cola store in the mall, right? Everything Coca-Cola right there in the plaza where your offices are. And I remember the first week I did something like ate at Taco Bell and brought my food back to my lunch, and they were like, low, take that out of the building. It's got Pepsi products, right? That was my first lesson in brand loyalty.
Ah, very interesting.
That was my first lesson in brand loyalty, down to the Coke Red. And then I remember the Coca-Cola bear was on the cover of that directory that I was just talking about. And I put a blue scarf on the Coca-Cola and they were like, no, no, no. That's the wrong shade of blue. It's Pepsi blue. So I learned brand loyalty and I learned brand colors in the first 2 or 3 weeks in the business. And then I learned that there's a such thing as Coke Red. There are certain types of graphics that we have to have. There's certain criteria in terms of even the syntax for the email addresses, right? That has to be put in. There was processes, there was procedures. And so I learned the value of consistency from there, okay? Then a few years later, fast forward, I ended up working at Delta Airlines. So when you go to the airport today and you check in through the kiosk, I was on the team that built the first kiosk, right?
Oh, how cool is that?
I know. I can't believe it. Every time I go through, I'm so geeked. And so, but here was the problem. The creative people who wanted it to look nice didn't understand what the technology people were saying, who needed to program it. I was the liaison that said I spoke tech and I spoke creative, and that was kind of, and so that's been a in my career, being a lot technical and a lot creative equally, right, has been how I've been able to really leverage building brand. So what did Delta teach me about Coca-Cola? That consistency, right? So if they've got it on the planes and the ticket jackets and the uniforms and the websites now, right? Mm-hmm. Everything looks like it came from the same brand family. Okay. Really quick. I'm closing up this story now.
Oh, you're good. You're good. I'm loving it. I'm loving every bit of it.
September 11th happened. I'm working at Delta. Okay. So the hospitality and airline industry got hit really, really hard and I got laid off. Okay, I got laid off. And the first contract was, we can't afford to keep you as an employee, but we need you to finish the work that we're doing. So my very first contract was as a Delta contractor. That was my very first client, right? Very first client. And then I had friends and family, and I always said, I'm going to go back to work as soon as all of this is over. And now it's been 24 years, been a full-time entrepreneur. Still doing branding mixed with technology.
I love it. Well, and I want to say you may be a unicorn in the fact that it is so rare to find a creative that is also really good with technology. Not that some creatives aren't, I'm not saying they don't get Photoshopping and all that, but to have that mix like you've described, there's a lot of creatives that, you know, we think differently than engineers do. And so that's really cool. I love that. I love the story about walking into Coca-Cola and having a Pepsi product that they noticed and like, no way, not here. Yeah, that brand loyalty is not something we think about like that very often. I can imagine that's hugely valuable. Well, let's fast forward a few years. You mentioned AI and when you and I started chatting about that, how has AI impacted what you're doing from a branding perspective? I think a lot of people go, well, I don't get it. I mean, AI is not necessarily going to create a good logo for me. We know that. So, and maybe I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. But tell me, where does AI fit into the branding game?
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's go back 6 years ago, right? About 6 years ago. And I ran a very successful branding agency. And I was charging between $10,000 and $20,000 for a branding package, right? And so we're talking about, you know, I had doctors, lawyers, really high profile people flying in. We did photo shoots. Those photo shoots had to have photographers, makeup artists, hairstylists, right? And rent the location. So that was just the photo shoot. And then you move into hiring the graphic designer to do the logo and the look and feel and the social media. And then you hire the web developer, right? And then you got to hire a publicist to promote all this stuff to launch it, right? So we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars. Well, if you look at getting the same package, now we can go and create our own Laura model.
Oh, yeah. Love Laura's.
Get brand photos, right? For $50 instead of $5,000, right?
Oh, yeah.
And even if you're on the low end, it's paying $250 for photos. If you did it because you got a friend that's a photographer, you're still going to pay $50 to get this Laura trained and turning out great pictures, and you can continue to do that. So that went out of the window, right? Then you've got all of these websites where you can put all these platforms where you can put in an outline, right, for what you want on the site, and it will just go and build all the pages for you.
Yep.
Right? You know, Gamma does that. There's a few other platforms that will do that. And so now we don't need the web developers, right? Social media graphics, we got Canva. You can buy a template and make it look great with the photos.
Oh, yeah.
And then even with logos, the world of logos has changed. And I tell people, don't put so much responsibility on the logo. Just get a simple text logo, because now you got what? You've got icons, you've got GIFs, you've got moving videos, you've got all of these other things to communicate the brand. Back in the day when they were creating, you know, the Coca-Colas and the Deltas, there was a lot of responsibility on the logo. Now you can get a simple text logo by going to, you do it at Canva, you can go to Looker.ai. You know, there are so many places you can go. So because we don't need so much from the logo, you can absolutely use AI to create the logo. So now we got the logo, we got the social media, we got the website, and we've got the images, and you probably can do this all for less than $250.
Absolutely amazing. So then the question comes up, how do you make any money doing that for clients if they can do it so cheaply?
So for me, I teach it, right?
I love
teach it.
Yep.
Right. So I think the first time that I taught a ChatGPT class, I charged $20 for it, not knowing it was going to be a big deal. And I want to say about 275 people showed up for the first one. So
not
I think
bad,
I made
though,
$12,000, $12,000 the first month.
You're like, game on, let's go.
Right. And so that's one thing. But there are other things that people don't want to do for themselves. Like, custom GPTs with an API, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Really starting to get involved with the agents and teaching them on the execution workflow side. So the workflow AI is where the bigger money is, even bigger than the classes. But the classes, if you've got volume, the classes will make you some money.
No question. No question. So talk to me about this. I know I'm not a brand expert, by the way, and yet I probably, because I used to do a lot of web design and all that, I at least generally know a good brand when I see it. There's a lot of clients that don't. They really struggle with that. How do you work with clients that are, you know, I love your theory on logos. Logos, one, they don't have to be, they're not as important as we think, because it's really only us as the owners that love them as much as we do. And two, they're almost always way too complex. How do you deal with that owner that's like, no, my logo needs to be, one, much more complex, and of course the infamous, my logo's got to be bigger. How do you deal with those two things from the client?
And so one of the two things, I'm going to say this, I'm a little bit of a jerk when it comes to branding, right?
That's fair.
A little bit of a snob. And a little bit of, if you want me to work with you on your brand, I know it's your brand, but I get final creative oversight.
And, I love you already, Jay. That's great. Because you know what? When it's not our area of expertise, we need somebody to be able to say, hey, I'll take responsibility, because what you come up with may not be what you really think you need.
And I think that I'm pretty good at positioning myself to understand that while you're thinking logo, I've already in my mind seen how it's going to lay out with all these other things. I know that you want a YouTube channel or a podcast. I know it's got to be this little icon in the corner of your image. I already know what it needs to do. And so it happens time and time again when we get to the end and the client says, oh, now I get it. Now I get it. So sometimes they just simply don't have the vision. I have been very blessed that for the most part, my clients do trust me. But you get those who think like they believe in their vision more than they believe in your skill set.
Yeah. Right? That's when we have the why did you hire me discussion, right?
Right. And so instead of doing that, it's simple. Most people come, they come with a vision, but they also come with a goal. And so when the goal is competing with the vision, it's easier to convince them. If you said,
so good,
this is your goal, this path isn't going to get you to that goal. So what do you want to hold on to? The vision or the goal? Because
love
the path
that
isn't going to get you there.
Hmm. I love that. So the difficult conversations, you don't mind those. It sounds like you've had a few of those over the years. You've learned how to have them.
I've had a few.
Yeah. That is the benefit of experience, though, isn't it? I mean, we've been through that, you know. I hate to say this because we didn't mean to make fun of our clients, but we used to, every year when we had our web agency, we at our Christmas party, we would put together a big board of the clients that were in the, they'd see their web design and they would love it, except for one thing. Make my logo bigger. And I'm like, let's look at Amazon and let's look at Walmart and let's look at all these companies. How big is their logo in the context? Well, yeah, but that's because they're so well-known. I'm not well-known. I want mine to take up 3/4 of the page. And I'm like, you're going to love it. But nobody else went to see your logo. They went out there for purpose. So I can definitely relate to where you're coming from. Talk to us as a small business owner or a medium business owner, even a larger corporate brand. Where do you see AI fitting into the teams that they're using? Because it sounds like for what you're doing, you're really helping the teams figure out how to do this branding, how to teaching those marketing teams how to use that. What are some of the things that you see, maybe from a tool perspective? Let's start there. What are some of the tools that you recommend those teams be looking at? Are you very specialty? Are we using some specifics, more general? Where do we go with that?
Yeah, and so let's start with the corporations first, because I think they're the slower adapters. I think they do a lot more thinking, a lot more testing, a lot more ideations with theirs. And so for them, the number one thing they're going to look at is security.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what brands are leading the way in security? OpenAI sort of with their enterprise. I definitely think that Anthropic over with Claude is putting way more emphasis on security.
Definitely.
But it seems to be so much emphasis that they lag in innovation a little bit. Right. And so
maybe a lot even. I mean, they just they just came out with web search. What, last week? I think it was a week before. Right. So it's like, OK, come on, guys.
Right. And so I think that security or innovation, and I think that's going to boil down to how the agencies are going to adapt them. So I think government agencies are going to go more with the Anthropic kind of secure. Right. Mm-hmm. Where corporations, the private sector, is probably going to go more for functionality, especially if you got somebody like Microsoft working hand in hand with OpenAI so that their co-pilot can kind of do a lot of the things that OpenAI can do. So that's what I kind of see. I talked to some people that work in government just about AI, and I thought that the government would build their own, and they're saying it's too expensive. The infrastructure and everything that it would take is just too expensive. So they are going to get something out of the box, but likely strip it down. So even if they go over to Anthropic and they get the Claude, they're going to strip it down so much it's not going to look like Claude.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that that's what we're looking at. I think that, of course, the mid-size businesses, right? And so we're talking about businesses that are around the $10 million mark. Those are kind of the 10 to 100 million. Those are still considered small and medium. I think that's where we're going to see the most innovation, okay? Because they can be a little more agile with what they attempt to do.
Absolutely.
And so I definitely think that they're going to lean towards where they get the most bang for the buck. Of course, right now, that's the OpenAI suite. It's kind of like the Microsoft suite, where there's something in the Microsoft suite for everything.
For OpenAI
is doing that. It's got something for it. Now they've got Sora, and then they've got Dolly, and then they've got this, and they just keep on acquiring and adding more to it. So I just think that I don't even think that OpenAI is the best platform. I don't even think they're the best of the AIs.
Yeah.
But I also don't think Microsoft was the best of the AI.
Well, I was going to say, we could have a great discussion and we could irritate some people, but most people, I think, would agree Microsoft didn't make the best of any software. They just brought it together better and were a better marketing company than the rest of them. And as a result, it's, in my mind, Jay, it's a lot like AI is nowadays. Everybody goes, what's the tool? What tool do I need to be using? And my answer is generally, how are you using it? Well, I'm not. Well, then whatever tool you have will give you such massive value. Don't worry about the perfect tool right now, because I don't care whether you have chat, you have Copilot, you have, which I'm sorry if you have Copilot, if you have any of those, sorry, just again, a Microsoft example, it's not the best AI out there. But if that's the AI that you have and it's in front of you, use it because it's still so much better than not having any AI at all. I think that's a big thing for clients. I love to hear your perspective, though, as you think government, enterprise, and all that, and kind of the differences there. As you look forward, what do you see? We're doing this in 2025. This is going to go live in April, as we're recording it, ironically, because we're early enough in April. But what do you see? Your crystal ball, mine's a little cloudy and cracked. What do you see happening in the rest of 2025 that you think businesses in particular, and especially branding specialists, need to be paying attention to?
The AI agent, right?
Yeah.
The AI agent. Absolutely. And so when we say, hey, let's break down what that means. The AI agent means it's allowing one system to talk to the other system to actually get things done. So I think we've been having fun. The trends have been having fun, right? Can I turn myself into a Simpsons meme, right? Can I turn my dog into a Ghibli studio art? You know, we've been having fun. Oh, wait, we can get an avatar that talks. I think that now we're moving from fun to skill sets. Okay.
Yes.
We're moving from fun into skill sets. So I tell people, everybody's like, oh my God, it's magic. So we need to move from magic to methodology.
I love that line. That's good.
It's not magic, it's a method, right? So when we move into the methodology, that means the use cases, that means the executables, the tangible deliverables, okay? Then it's great that ChatGPT can give me a list of tasks. Now, add those tasks to my calendar, right? Now, can it book a flight for me? Now, you know, not only can it write the content for the website, but post to the website, right? Now, can it do the SEO optimization for the post? So we're needing it to do more things than just be smart, right? It's smart. It's intelligent. We also need it to be effective.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So
I think that's what we're going to see more of. I can remember when I first started, first image I asked Midjourney was, give me Winnie the Pooh as a dragon slayer, right?
I
can remember
that.
Going around to my family members like, look at Winnie the Pooh, he's a dragon slayer. They're like, okay, but what are you going to do with it? It's like, nothing. It's cool. Like, what are you going to do with it? And so I think that we're at the place where everybody needs to understand, what are we going to do with it? And I think to make money, right? The money is in the, what are we going to do with it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're so spot on. It reminds me of a discussion I had early in social media days, and I'm going to date myself because I was definitely in the workforce then doing stuff. And people are like, yeah, I'm using it, but I'm not making any money on it. You know, we would have, I remember in the city I lived in at the time, this was of course before AI and all that, that one of the leading social media guys in the city was incredibly popular. Everybody knew him. He posted on social media all the time and everybody knew him. And it was almost like a mini celebrity. And I remember I had lunch with him one day and he goes, and I said, man, it looks like business is booming. He goes, the problem is I'm not making a penny. And I'm like, but man, you're out there all the time. He goes, but I'm not making any money. And I think that's the case with a lot of AI right now. I think, like you said, we're having a lot of fun. We're enjoying it, but we're not, a lot of people at least, are not necessarily implementing it to make money. It's an interesting concept and not just directly related to brand, but I'd love your theory. I have a large audience. We speak to about 500,000 people a day right now on AI. And one of the most common questions it seems I get from people is, how can I leverage AI to make money? Since you're talking about making money, I see a lot of people that envision AI as kind of this magical money tree. And my belief, I'll just share where I stand, is that we need to use AI to amplify what we're already doing. We need to find a service, something that people are willing to pay money for. So, you know, Coca-Cola has a great business because I pay money almost every day so that I can have their Diet Coke and drink it because I like it. Mm-hmm. And so they're bringing value to me to do that. You need something. Now, they can use AI to maybe improve how they're doing it, to find efficiencies, to do all kinds of things in their business. But at the end of the day, they're still going to be delivering my Diet Coke because that's what I want.
Correct.
How do you address that maybe that new entrepreneur out there, that startup that's like, but can't I just use AI to make money somehow? What type of advice would you have for that entrepreneur?
Right. And so you nailed it. AI is the tool, not the offer.
Oh, that's a good line. You are a branding genius, Jay. That's like, ooh, these are like golden nuggets. I love this.
Stop and pause and say that again, okay? AI is the tool and not the offer, okay? So Canva is a tool and not the offer. The offer are, you know, the graphics and the things like that that you can do for people. You can teach it, but it's still, the teaching is the offer, okay? And so be clear on what your offer is. Be clear on what your offer is. And then how does AI allow you to create content, right, to market, create marketing to market, enhance the deliverable itself, okay? Make the deliverable happen quicker or more concisely, right? So how do you save time, right? Go further, faster, and make more money with it. Those are the questions you have to ask yourself.
Great, great counsel, great wisdom there. Wow, you're like the queen of one-liners. I love that. Those are some of the amazing. Those are so good. I'm like, I hear that, and I'm like, why didn't I think of that? That's so awesome. I love that. Yes. So super, super cool stuff.
So let's talk about this a little bit with the large followers. The large following. I mean, I've definitely done that myself. And here's what I think influencers figured out later is that, okay, you don't make the money. Now, everybody wants to get 1 million followers. And yeah, you do get some money off of it if you can get to 1 million followers.
Maybe.
The platforms pay you as long as it suits their fancy. And then they change how much they pay
thank
you.
When they and then pay they can you. Drop you like
you
a
know,
hot
there's
potato.
So much control. And then the algorithm gets involved and they'll suppress your impressions and all of these things, right? All the things. So never allow your income to be held hostage, okay, by something else. Your brand is way bigger. Don't let it be held hostage by somebody else's platform. So let me say that again. Never let your brand be held hostage by someone else's platform, okay? And so the answer here is to create your own offers, right?
Yes.
There's so many ways to monetize. There's things like, you know, paid newsletters, digital products, courses, events, services, physical products, websites, offerings, you know, and technology. There's so much out there that you can do that's an offer. Figure out what your real offer is. And everybody's like, oh, sometimes it's just solve a problem. Not always solving a problem, right?
No.
You're not always, and that's the biggest misconception is that what problem do you solve? Well, sometimes I don't solve a problem. I just feed a need, feed a desire.
Okay? I was going to say Diet Coke does not fix a problem I have. I have water, but I still like my Diet Coke.
And I think for me, like I work with a lot of women, right? They like pretty things. I mean, nobody needed dog clothes.
Oh, Jake, can you talk to my wife,
please? I just got a puppy, right? And people, I was like, why didn't somebody tell me that they had canine clothes at TJ Maxx, right? So do I need canine clothes? I don't. Doesn't really solve a problem, right? But it's cute. It's fun. So also a desire. Feed a desire. Don't just solve a problem. You can also make a lot of money from feeding desires.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest brands have been built on that when you think about it. Yeah.
Luxury brands, especially.
Huge. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. No, I think that's incredible advice as you look forward. Where do you see brand? I guess let me ask you, I'm trying to figure out the way to word it. I told you when we started this, I don't have a lot of planned questions. I just like to have a conversation, so sometimes I stumble. But in my mind, and I'm not a branding expert, you are, so I'm really curious in your thoughts here, Jay. The core of branding hasn't necessarily changed over the last 20 or 30, maybe even 50 or 100 years. I don't know.
It's never changed.
Thank you. Okay. I'm glad I'm not wrong on that. What parts of branding are different today than maybe they were 20 years ago? The core hasn't, but are there parts of branding that we need to pay attention to now as business owners that we didn't 20 years ago?
Yeah. And so let's go and define what the brand is.
Okay.
And I think the biggest misconceptions is people think that the brand is visual or tangible. And it's not. Brand is a very intangible thing. So what is branding? Branding is the value of a promise. Ooh. It's the promise. It's the promise of what are you going to deliver. And so if we think about Coca-Cola, when we see the bottle or the symbols, the promise of what we're going to deliver is a specific taste, a specific experience, a specific thing. So it's the promise of what you're going to deliver. That's what branding is. Now, how is that promise expressed? Visually, sounds, music, a lot of more tangible things that make us give the emotional connection. And so the value, you proving your value or delivering value to create the brand, that has never changed. Now, what have the, what we called, touch points, right? Mm-hmm. There's a universe of about 35 touch points. It's probably 50 with technology now, but there's touch points, right? The graphics, the logo, the, all of these are touch points for a brand, and it makes up kind of a universe. Okay. So what shifts is the touch points. Okay. So I can remember when I first started in branding, there was no social media. So that was not a touch point, right?
Makes sense.
So the touch points were the logo or a website, newsletters, you know, those. And we're talking about like the physical newsletters.
I would say those were the paper ones that used to come. Remember the ones that came over the fax machines?
Faxes, you know.
Yeah.
The live signature, right? The wet signature, right? Those were all things because everybody's signature had to look the same on the emails even. And so those were all touch points. Now, what are our touch points? Meaning the way that people create an experience with our brand. And so that's what continues to change as platforms change. So now we've got social media. So now we've got apps, mobile, right? That's a way that we can create a new experience. And so with AI, AI itself isn't a touch point, but AI is creating the touch points. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do that.
So they're creating the mobile apps. They're creating the email signatures. They're creating the websites. They're creating the additional touch points and things when you get into automations like ManyChat or Textful, right? Now AI is creating the automation for the communication.
So good. So good. Wow. I wish I'd met you 20 years ago, Jay, because you would have saved me a lot of frustration along the way. So relevant. I love that, that it, the core hasn't, but those touch points have. That's just so profound when you think about it. It reminds me, one of my mentors actually was a marketer, not a brander necessarily, but a marketer. And he always told me, because I don't know what I can teach you. And he was retired when I met him. And I said, you don't understand, Dave. You have so much experience in marketing and messaging, and that's what he was really good at. I want to understand that. And he goes, yeah, but I did messaging for billboards. And I go, it doesn't matter what you did messaging for. It was the audience, and it was the message and what resonated. And I remember at the time telling him, you may think billboards are irrelevant, and this was in early 2000s. But I said, I think that our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. So if you, since you know billboards, I think you know exactly what I need to learn, which is how to grab attention quickly and cause somebody to take action. Because that is one of the things I do think has changed, is that 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, I think we were a little slower and gave a few more moments. I'm not saying tons, but we gave a few more moments to a message than we give today. I also think we probably had fewer messages bombarding us so that we were probably a little easier to be caught by a simpler message than maybe we are today. So any thoughts on that?
I think so, but I'm finding that digital buyers are becoming more intelligent. It used to be the color of the button would make them click, right? The psychology of the color of the website button. It used to be catchy tunes. I think that so many people learn their lesson from clicking too fast and having buyer's remorse that they're now doing more research before they make their purchase. Because guess what we got? We got Trustpilot. We've got Google reviews. We've got, let me call a friend and see what they did. If they liked it, their experience. So think about it. Even if you go on Amazon to buy something, you click and go down to the reviews and you see the videos, the pictures.
Yeah.
So people are becoming more intelligent and spending a little bit more time than they did, say, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, to make a purchase, even an inexpensive purchase, right?
Yeah,
so I can see in your community when you drop, hey, I've got this course, it's only 10 bucks. I still see 32,000 questions about a $10 purchase. Right?
It's true. And it's interesting you say that. We just started testing those $10 ones to see how they would go over. And they've gone over great, but I've been surprised because in my mind it's 10 bucks. It's just it's a yes or no. There's no thing to think about. But you're right. There's as many, sometimes more questions
there's
than
more
we get
questions.
On the more expensive ones.
And here's why there are more questions, because now sometimes it's not about the money, it's about the time. Do I have the time? Is this going to be worth the time that it's going to take? And so I too have done the $10, $20 versus the $97. And they do move, right? But sometimes the conversation for me is, do I want to offer the level of support for that amount of money when I can make triple the money, right? And it's fine if you have all those questions, but look at how much money I made to counteract the time. So time has become
time
the
is a big
asset.
Issue. Yeah.
Time is the biggest asset.
It is. Well, Jay, I could go on forever, but I promised you we wouldn't go much past where we're at. What I'd love to know is people that want to reach out to you, they want to talk to you, they want to learn how do they get in touch with you?
So my name, I know it's Jay, but it's spelled J-A-I. STONE. And I'm Jay Stone everywhere. So you can visit my site at jstone.com. I'm on every social media platform as the same name. And then I think that we're going to drop maybe a link to, you know, either, and you can tell me, Jonathan, I've got a monetization AI ebook. And I've also got a tech stack, a brand by AI tech stack tool.
Whatever you want or both, you let me know. We'll add them right down here in the links and we'll put them in the comments and everything else. Thank you, Jay. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I'll have that done. I'll give you those links. And I want to say thank you so much for sharing your platform. One, you bring a lot of great people onto this podcast, but your community, they're very great people. They embrace each other. They are supportive. They embrace what you have to say. And, you know, what I like is that they're really smart when it comes to the technology.
Yeah, we have an amazing community, people.
And you for just sharing. You know, I love the fact that you share the bumps, the bruises, the mistakes, the challenges, and the wins. So I just love that. So thank you so much.
It's all part of the journey, you know. You got to be real.
It is.
Okay. Well, Jay, thank you so much for your time. So grateful to have you on the show and to chat with you. I want to thank everybody that's listening, that's hung out with us today. You guys have gotten some amazing stuff from Jay. We're so grateful for that. We'll hope you'll join us on the next time as well. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.